Doctor Show. It's unique, boutique, the screening room, Kingston's only downtown cinema, a cool and cozy gym. So silence that phone, leave your worries at home, take an armchair vacation to sights unseen, fly solo with friends, or take a date. It's great, real butter, the screening room. Independently owned and operated. Visit us at screeningroomkingston.com.
Okay, we're here on CFRC 101.9 FM, CFRC Live Sessions. We're joined today by something quite different from what we've heard on this on the live sessions before. I'm your host, Rue, and we're joined by Leech. Hello, guys.
Hello. Hi.
Why don't you guys just introduce yourselves to the crowd? Because I think a lot of them listening might not know who you are.
My name is Cooper, and I'm the vocalist in Leech.
My name's Isaac. I play the drums in Leech.
My name is Andrew, and I play the guitar
in Leech.
And we are a three-piece hardcore
grind core death metal
band.
Whatever you want to call
power
it.
Power violence. It's like it's that.
Yeah, power violence. That's a good one.
Yeah,
we're posers.
we're a metal band.
Yeah.
I think that sums it up well.
Yeah.
How did you guys get started? Because, like, the metal scene in Kingston, at least, is kind of, like, here and there. And, like, you see a couple of bands come up from every now and then. But how did metal happen for you guys?
Well, metal was before we started playing, I guess. Like, hardcore punk and...
No, we started as a sludge metal band.
Yeah, kind of gone through iterations.
Yeah, we started as sludge, and then we wrote the same riff like 5 times, and we're like, we cannot write like the dun 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 dun. Like, again, it's the same thing over and over. We're not creative enough for a sludge. And then it changed to like hardcore punk. We just messed around for like a year trying to figure out like a sound, and then we booked a show at the Mansion and just sat down and actually learned some songs and kind of wormed our way into the current sound.
We started in our studio at school.
Oh, yes, that's the other part.
Yeah, we all met in high school. Wasn't too long ago, a few years ago, and then started jamming in the rehearsal space studio.
And this wasn't in Kingston?
No, Napanee District Secondary School.
We're closer to Belleville, if anything.
Yeah.
Like where we're initially from, and then...
I'll say it. We're from Deserano.
Right on.
And this guy...
Represent.
From Tamworth.
Represent.
Shout out Tamworth.
Shout out Ajax.
I love living in rural areas.
Yes.
It's great scenes.
We all learn our instruments together. Like, that's...
Yeah, I couldn't scream before. He didn't play drums before, and he was a pianist.
Yeah, and then I was on bass before, and he was on guitar, too.
And then we taught each other.
We kind of switched the instruments around, like, as we switched, you know, genres and whatnot.
Like you're saying, it was a whole small-town vibe. That's not always what you think of as, like, the metal kind of origin.
Absolutely
place.
Not. That is why we do not play shows there. That's why we play in Kingston. We played Napanee Battle of the Bands, and it was a catastrophe because...
There's no
what
audience.
What was the other music on the bill?
Like
indie rock?
Indie rock, mostly.
We got some folk country.
Yeah, folk.
Lots of acoustics.
And then we came on in drag... And just bombed. No one was like interacting with them. I mean, we kind of knew, but no one interacted with it. It was just a very awkward performance, but it was still.
We weren't anticipating much.
No, we were not expecting
Greg,
it,
so.
But it was worth at least doing.
It was very fun.
I mean, at some point, it has to be fun, right?
Yeah.
It was very fun.
Yes. I did tear up my girlfriend's dress, unfortunately.
Oh, did you destroy that?
The strap is, like,
sucks.
Very ripped, so she just has to, like, safety pin that now.
Yeah, there was a nip slip. It's posted on her Instagram from Cooper.
Live you didn't
stage.
Censor that?
My bad.
Well, free the nipple, I guess, for you guys, too. But I've seen you guys performing in costume before, because, like, the first and only time that I've seen you live was at Homegrown.
Yes.
And should I describe this, or do you want to describe
You can describe it. I'd like to see your
so
perspective.
So, 1 a.m. on 5th, right, just after kind of May the 4th, you guys come on, dressed out, completely kitted out in Star Wars-themed kind of clothes. There may be 10 people there in the basement of the mansion. They've just sat through, like, a hardcore performance, some indie stuff. They're kind of tired. You can see that they were sitting for the hardcore band. And then you guys come on. And then, like, these 7 people who are left there go crazy.
Yeah.
So tell me about that gig.
It's Chris and Paul, saviors. Thank you, Chris and Paul.
We love them. Because in truth, we don't know where that came from.
No.
We don't know where our audience came from other than Chris and Paul.
Yeah, like we ran into these guys outside. We were showing him our set list because we had like written it out in crayons, and he was.
Yes, I remember that.
Yeah, he enjoyed like Chris and Paul. They both enjoyed the names of our songs, and they were like, all right, we got to catch you guys, and we'll bring people down. So they went, like, upstairs, because there was another show going on, and just started telling everyone, like, there's a sick metal band downstairs. Come downstairs right now. You got to see them. So they got a good crowd, and they were, like, they were, you know, interacting with us and moving. And I think that, like, being the person who's brave enough to start, like, dancing and moshing kind of just brings everyone else into it.
Oh yeah, and like a bit of a circle pit with three other people around.
Yeah,
it was by far one of our most fun shows.
Yes,
even with a lack of people.
We played so sloppy, but it was very fun.
We don't know names for Chris and Paul, but they know who they are. If they're out there, then
Chris and Paul. Thank you.
Yeah, it was Star Wars costumes because May the 4th.
We did miss it. May the 5th, but the idea was there.
A Jedi and a Sith and the orange jumpsuit that we found at Value Village. As a rebel pilot.
Which I also remember a lot of people mistook for an orange prison jumpsuit.
Yeah.
There wasn't a whole lot to distinguish.
But you also had
the
lightsabers and everything, so I'm sure people would figure out from context. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't know. A lot of people didn't.
Out in the crowd.
A lot of people just kept like asking why I was dressed up. I'm like, it's May the 4th.
Yeah, a lot of people just came up to us like, man, I really love your guys' style.
Like, I'm wearing Jedi robes.
Rocking the monk lifestyle.
Yeah.
Which must have surprised them when you came on stage then.
Yeah. Oh, that was. Did you remember like the three girls that were waiting for us to come on? They were watching, and then as soon as we started playing, they just walked out. That was really nice. I enjoyed that.
Still, like a lot more enthusiasm than you were saying, Deseronto.
We've never played in Deseronto.
Technically, we did.
Wasn't what you just heard though.
Yeah, we were kind of in like a hardcore punk sound, and we submitted that, and the people who were organizing it knew us from another like cover band we used to be in that did like pop covers.
Shout out to Bob Schmerkley.
Yeah, it was Bob Schmerkley. So they recognized us from that and like knew we could do different stuff. So it was like we played like pop punk.
Yeah.
Yeah, it didn't sound good because I can't sing for the life of me.
I wouldn't have put you guys down as a pop band. But
no.
Like,
We were for one show in Deseronto because we were intentionally asked to tone it down.
Yes, and we wanted to play a show, so we just took it.
Yep.
Okay. Well, we'll go into a few of your songs. You're playing some originals and some covers.
Yes.
So tell us what we're going to hear first.
I don't quite remember.
It's a long set list for today.
Yeah, 11, I'm pretty sure.
You will hear Smurf Village Massacre.
Smurf Village Massacre. Then the next one was Creepy Barista. Then it was The Binding of Isaac. Afterwards, you had a cover of a Wormrot song called Evolved Into Nothing. Then another original called Drywall Xanax. A Pig Destroyer cover after for Trojan Whore. Crumpet Daddy, another original after. Junkyard God, a cover of Pig Destroyer as well. Garbage Patch Kids, then a cover of Concubine by Converge, and Vagisil Pussy.
Well, let's hear a few of these, and then we'll come back and talk about more music with you guys.
Yeah, of course.
Leech here on CFRC.
Yeah.
Yep.
We're here back at C4C. I'm your host, Rue. We're joined by Leech. We've got Cooper, Isaac, Andrew joining us today. We heard a few of your songs, and you told us the names of these songs.
Yeah.
And I want to ask a bit about them, because they're all pretty interesting. Like, there's scenarios happening in these songs.
Yeah.
I guess we start with Smurf Village.
Smurf Village. A.K.A. Life-Saving Blowjob at the Circle K.
I can't tell what the lyrics say because I can't really hear any of them.
I don't know what the lyrics say.
I have to be real. Half of them are like, they're like rhythmic patterns. That's why the song titles are that, because I haven't written too many lyrics. I have some like down. I'll just occasionally throw in the lyrics that I remember I've written down for the songs, like throughout it. But then if I fall back, I'll just say the sounds that kind of sound like those lyrics. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they don't have lyrics at all.
Yeah, our song titles come from a collective word document.
Yes.
Right, the absolute most obscure thing that could come to mind. And
yeah, and then when we write a new one, we just grab from it.
Yeah, at random.
So do they actually refer to anything? Like, are there kind of themes, concepts running through?
No, Vagisil Pussy has,
yes,
like,
there are
real
some
lyrics.
Real world connections.
There's, like
with Vagisil.
That Vagisil Pussy has, like,
there's
actual lyrics, and, like, it's genuinely telling a story through the lyrics.
Yes. Well, it's based on a true story, too, whether or
yeah,
not you want to get into
I do not want to get
like,
into that.
No, that's fine.
It's like, it's a somewhat comedic name, obviously. Like, it's, like, the lyrics are somewhat describing, like, a breakup and, like, discovering yourself afterwards. So it's, like, implying that Vagisil Pussy tore your life apart, and now you're looking for a new.
But you definitely put yourself out there when you're performing that song.
Yeah.
That's our favorite.
Yeah, that's the one we always end our
Leech
set with.
Leech Anthem.
It is the most well-written one, I'd
it's
say.
It's the core of our... You got a little something.
Do
it's
I?
The core of our set.
Yeah. The Leech Magnum Opus.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about the live performance, though, because you guys do go pretty crazy and pretty hard live.
Yeah.
We try. That's our goal.
That is the reason why I'm not playing bass or guitar anymore. Like, we started with that, and then...
Mm-hmm. We used to be, bass plus a guitar and drums, or mm-hmm. vice versa.
Yeah.
We had a bass and guitar, but that...
Then we just...
Very famously now has been scrapped.
Yes, and we get offers for a bassist after every single show. I'm sorry, we are not looking for a bassist. You will not play tennis with us at like 3 a.m. in our underwear.
It's a
we need to find a personality
club.
For
yeah.
it.
It's a very exclusive club.
Sorry, about the actual question now. For live shows, yeah, that's why I don't have a bass or a guitar, so I can just go as crazy as possible and get like a really hype show and like go into the pit, jump around, like just build energy, because it's also easier to get into the music if you can see someone like also very much into it. That being said, sometimes the crowd is not into it, and I look really silly running around.
As me and Andrew work on with every performance, getting tighter together musically and playing our instruments better, Cooper is actively it's his instrument is being the front man and practicing going out there and practicing getting the audience moving and
our goal is to just put on the craziest show.
Yeah, I got a very nice compliment at our last show. I think I've told you too, but I got told I had the best crowd work ever seen.
It was the best crowd work you have done yet thus far.
So. Yeah, I mean, it was just because the crowd actually listened to me. I was like, pit, and then a pit would form.
Yeah, we got the crowd surf going on. Shout out Jacob Detler.
Yes.
Shout out Frank Soto from Guatemala.
Yes.
I love you, Frank Soto.
We love you, Frank Soto.
I shouted you out during the show, but the video of it, they weren't recording that part. So
for context, we have a random Guatemalan man who messages us constantly.
Yeah, quite regularly.
We went viral on YouTube, you see. So
don't worry about it.
Show that up.
Don't worry about it.
Well, you've got real fans then.
One. From Guatemala, we got a guy.
He is one
a real
fan.
One. Yeah. It's hard to find a bass player because we're high school friends, and we can't invent another high school friend.
You've got the dynamic going.
Yeah, we try to do physical activities before shows. Like we went swimming before a show. We went sledding. We just played tennis before a show. Like I said, I don't think you could just find someone to do that.
But the three-person, no bass, no low-end setup, it's just classic,
there's a lot of grind bands that do that.
And Pig Destroyer was the big one because they're early grind.
It just works for the subgenre of metal.
Yeah, and Deterioration, they're just a drummer, a guitarist, and the guitar is also doing the vocals. Yeah.
We kind of have to do the style that we do because, whenever we slow it down, whenever we try and fake a low end, it does not work.
Yeah, we got to kind of just lean it to the punk and groovy. Sorry. Yep.
And for our radio listeners who can't see, you are wearing a Pig Destroyer t-shirt.
Oh, yes. While he was saying that, I was...
I'm also hearing a touch of emo going on in especially your last song.
Yes, Badge is So Pussy.
That's my this fault. Guy.
I'm a big fan of melodic music. These guys are a lot more into metal than I am. I like piano.
Yeah.
I don't know. I write how I write piano on guitar. So writing metal is pretty challenging sometimes, but we've really figured it out recently.
We do also like emo, though.
Yes, I'm a big fan of
we like some scrams,
screamy emo, yeah.
And there's plenty of melodic stuff that we're all into. I mean, it's just...
He is much more into it, and he controls the melody with his instrument.
But that's the thing that's kind of we can easily find common ground in these subgenres, so it's we're able to make it work and are found relatively as best as we can.
Yeah. But. No, I think having him as well helps because my brain is rotten from how much minced core I've listened to, so my taste is just evil.
If you ever wanted to die, listen to minced core.
It's just,
if you ever wanted absolutely no enjoyment from anything ever, listen
to
minced
core. Okay,
it's corny.
It's fun. Anyway,
it's not good.
I'd go to a minced core show.
Yeah, absolutely. It's it's not meant to be super serious. At least I hope not. If it's super serious, you're a loser.
Yeah.
But
that goes for every genre of metal.
Yeah.
Well, on that note, let's go into some more of your songs.
Yeah, thank you. This next one is a Pig Destroyer cover. This is Trojan Horror.
let me cook. Okay. thank you so much for having us. We've been Leech. You can find us on Instagram, Leech_band. How do you spell
it? Yeah, LEITCH.
Oh, what else is coming up for you guys?
Yeah, we're working on an EP. You heard literally all of our original songs just then, so if you like them, we'll try to record them properly.
Yeah, you might hear more on the EP. We'll see. There's going to be a music video, hopefully, for Vagisil coming up.
We got merch out.
Oh, yes, dude. And merch.
DM us on Instagram if you want our shirts.
Yeah.
Or come to our shows.
Yeah, or just DM us and I can send you a picture. I will not be offended if you do not want to buy it after I send you the picture. It's just, I do not want to make a post because I'm lazy. So.
And I know that you guys are very keen on working on your candid picture music video compilation as well.
Yeah,
that's for the
that's in the works. That's for Vagisil, yeah. For the Leech anthem. It needs a music video. If anything's gonna have a music video, it's gonna be that song. We've got our last show, at least for a while, coming up sometime before the end of August. We still gotta finalize some things, so look for us on Instagram for updates on that. Yes. We might be playing in Hamilton, Ontario, in addition to that. So
yeah, that's pretty cool. So people can check out your Instagram, Leech. I before E, except when you're spelling Leech.
Yeah.
Awesome, guys. We'll go out with a last few set of songs. Thanks so much for joining me today, everyone. Leech.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, next up is Garbage Patch Kids.
We'll be right back.
next one is another cover. It is Concubine by Converge.
Today on Wings, Child Care in Kenya, a report by Diana Wanyonyi.
Care is work.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world. Produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
I am at Kisumundogo Slums in Mombasa County. Here, I have come to meet Edel Wafula, a mother and also a caregiver for children below the age of 4 years, who are brought to her house daily by parents who go to work. It's 7 in the morning. I find her washing utensils outside her one-bedroom house. Then she cooks rice and fries some fish. This, she tells me, it's lunch for her 2 children. Edel tells me that her daycare opens at 8:30 in the morning from Monday to Saturday.
Mimi kweli kazi yangu ilikuwa kunikulea watoto. Watoto wananitaga tu mama mlezi. Wakati wa mpurupuko ukitoka nilikuwa na watoto tu 3. Yeah. Lakini mbeleni nilikuwa na watoto kama 6, 7. Lakini sasa kiwango kile walipofika cha kwenda shule wakaenda shule.
My work is to take care of the children. Children just call me mama, mama who take care of them. During COVID-19 outbreak, I had only 3 babies whom I was taking care of. But before COVID-19, I had between 6 to 7 children whom I was taking care of. But they grew fast and they were taken to school. So it was no longer my responsibility. I started afresh again.
Waweze kuongea wakitaka kwenda choo. Ya ndo wakienda shule wasipatie walimu shida. Na saa nyingine pia kucheza nao na wapatia kama toys. Wale ambao hawajui bado ndio wanajifunza kukaa ama kutembea, kuna baby walker.
I usually take care of children under the age of 4, so that when they reach 4 years, I usually tell parents to take them to school because I don't want any problem with the government. When they come here, I teach them how to go to the toilet and how to speak if they feel pressed, so that when they start going to school, they will not give teachers problem. And also, I have toys here. I usually play games with them. I also give the small ones baby rocker. What motivated me to start this caregiving is because one of my friends died while she was giving birth, and I requested the family to give me that baby so that I can take care of the baby. And that's how I felt like, yes, I have a calling in taking care of others. She's now 4 years. I charge 100 shillings per day for every kid who I take care of. They come with their food, and I'm the only caregiver here. When parents bring their children, they also carry food along with them.
Mtoto wa kwa siku tulikuwa tunalipa na 100. Mlezi wa ni mimi. Chakula wazazi wanaleta.
That was Edel Wafula, a mother and a caregiver for children below the age of 4 years. She spoke to me, Diana Wanyonyi, at Kisumu Ndogo Slums in Mombasa. Lucy Minayo is an advocate and executive director of Nature First, a global founder and capacity builder focused on building systems that support home-based childcare providers. After attending her media training on reporting about childcare in Mombasa, I asked her for an interview.
Nature First is a global funder and capacity builder that was established in 2022 with the sole purpose of building support for home-based childcare providers. It's estimated in Kenya, in the informal settlements, that about 60 to 80% of children in those settings are taken care of in their homes by women who open up their homes to provide this first service at a minimal fee. Mm-hmm. Though we are global, we started our operations in Kenya, and we are working in 3 counties, Mombasa, Kisumu, and Moranga.
Why these 3 counties?
The 3 counties, for various reasons, Kisumu and Mombasa, because Kisumu has a large peri-urban population with corresponding childcare needs. Mm-hmm. Mombasa has a large workers that are not living in Mombasa coming from other counties, and there's a huge care burden in Mombasa. And then in Moranga, while it is a rural county, it has some economic activities that make it peri-urban, like the flower farming, the agribusiness that's happening with Kakuzi and Del Monte, etc. We looked at the population dynamics and established the care needs in those dynamics. And we also were looking at counties where there's minimal work care interventions going on, counties where we could make a difference by supporting county governments and communities to design solutions for the challenges they are facing.
You are listening to Wings. The organization is in how many countries in Africa?
So far, we are just in Kenya. We are testing these learning interventions in Kenya, and then hopefully we will expand to other parts of the world.
And how is the reception in Kenya?
The reception has been quite good. Actually, when I started this work in 2022, county governments did not quite understand who a home-based childcare provider was or is. And in fact, some of them would term these women as illegal. So when we started the work and we started showing them what is going on, some studies had been done, and we brought those studies into the rooms with the government, that's when they realized, oh, we have a huge working population in the informal settlements that are helping us to do our job. So right now, we are collaborating with those 3 counties to think through policy solutions and solutions to make that service affordable, accessible, and of good quality.
What is caregiving?
So when we talk about care, we are talking about services that are provided to us, sometimes to individuals, and these are services that support the economy of the country, but they are invisible. They are provided in 2 formats. There's paid care, so the care like what is happening in hospitals, etc. And then there's unpaid care and domestic work that happens in domestic situations. So that really is the definition of care, and the type of care workers that we are working with. Our focus is these women that are providing care at little to no fee, because they could fall within the category of unpaid care or lowly paid care workers. And what we are doing is really bringing dignity to this work, visibility, so that people understand this work. And the definition of a home-based provider is just a woman that is providing care out of their home, their personal home, and they provide to a group of children at a fee or sometimes no fee. And this care can also be provided. It's not just these women, but we also have it in the format of our grandmothers, family, friends, and neighbors. Yeah.
Have Kenyans understood this?
Kenyans understand it. Actually, when we were having the conversation yesterday with the journalists, this is care. Everyone knows this is care. It's just that we are now beginning to understand care as it's work. It's not a voluntary thing. It's not, people are not idle. And then they decide we'll provide care. No, people are actually doing it as a means of earning an income. And there are several inputs that should be made so that the work becomes of good quality. So things like training, etc., that needs to happen so that these care providers, their skills are enhanced. So they don't just do minding of children, they also provide early learning opportunities to the children, among others. Yeah.
What came out strongly yesterday in your presentation?
So yesterday we were making the connection between care work and the time use survey that was launched by Kenya last year. And what came out strongly was just this understanding of the social dynamics in our societies that define our care infrastructure. And those are things like the demographic of the country. So who is it that is accessing care in Kenya or in Africa? Majority of the people that are accessing care are the children, particularly below age 3, and then actually below age 8, and then we have elderly people. But then in Africa, we also have a huge disease burden. So those are also people who access care. And then in terms of who is providing care, it's mostly women. We also looked at cultural factors that inform care, and the reason why we have more women providing care in Africa and even in Kenya is really because our culture, you know, defines, has kind of arranged, organized us in such a way that a lot of these jobs that are not seen as jobs are performed by women. We also looked at the policies and the implications of policies on the care infrastructure. So care is not just about leave, you know, the employment, the employed. It's also about the infrastructure. It's what we were talking about today, markets. How are societies supporting informal workers to meet the care needs of their families? So we looked at the comprehensiveness of the policies that are needed to make care, to build infrastructure that is responding to the needs of Kenyans, of Africans. And then we also looked at, now we were connecting, the valuing, what are the things that need to happen so that care work is valued through the 5R principles: recognize, reduce, redistribute, reward, and represent. Yeah, so we were looking at it through that five principle lens, so that we, you know, as the journalists report on this issue, they are looking at the comprehensiveness of the issue. They're bringing attention to the gaps in care, and sensitizing the public about care. So recognition is about making people understand that this is work. Care is work. And I want to equate it to things like our community health workers. When community health work, initially before these guys were called community health workers, they used to be called volunteers. And there was a connotation there that they are not quite doing work, you know. So recognition is bringing some dignity to the work and acknowledging that it is actually work. Then the second is reducing it. And reducing means that considering the care burden and identifying the interventions that are needed to lessen that burden. And those interventions could be, things like even sharing that care burden in the home, and so on and so forth. Redistribution includes, the infrastructure, basically spreading the care burden so it's not sitting within the home and not being performed by the woman only. And redistribution, it includes this infrastructure that is required so that the work is care work is performed across a set of institutions and not left to the home as a burden that is borne by the families. Then rewarding it is just compensating it. I talked about how home-based childcare providers receive very little money for their work. We've encountered situations where women are actually earning something like 20 shillings, which is it's below 50 cents, 50 US cents. And the match I've heard about is something like 200 shillings. So it's defining the value for that work and then allocating adequate resources so that people earn a living wage from that work. And then representation is really recognizing, supporting the care providers to organize, to advocate for their issues, to engage, to sit in policy conversations, because the wearer of the shoe is the one that really knows where it pinches.
Lucy Minayo is an advocate and executive director of Nature First, a global founder and capacity builder focused on building systems that support home-based childcare providers, discussing current practices and goals for childcare in Kenya. She talked to me, Diana Wanyonyi, in Mombasa. Do we have enough care centers here in Kenya?
That's a really good question. That care is provided. So when you talk about childcare, it's provided through two primary mechanisms. One is centers, childcare centers, and then the second is in the home. And in the home, there are two formats. It's either a nanny, somebody providing care out of the house of the child, or care provided out of the house of the provider. So in Kenya, the most dominant format, the one that most people know, actually in Africa, is the home-based version of care. So people either have a nanny or they take their child to some house belonging to some lady or man to take care of their children.
You are listening to Wings.
Child care centers are fairly new in our context. They are particularly for children that are aged 0 to 3. The assumption is these children are taken care of at home by their parents or by somebody that's being paid to do that work. There's actually a gap in terms of care centers for children aged 0 to 3. But we are seeing governments and private sector and social entrepreneurs like Kidogo, Tiny Totos and others beginning to support women to set up childcare centers in their communities. Mm-hmm. We are seeing government as well beginning to build care facilities in markets. So if you county government of I think it's Kirinyaga has a childcare center in the markets, and Busia, and among others.
Makweni. So we are
Makweni among Nakuru. Others. Yes, Nakuru. Yeah.
Can you talk about Children Acts and the care reforms that are coming through, and what will happen if all these children homes are no longer there?
Mm. Yeah. Okay, so the Children Act has pushed us towards something that I think is important, deinstitutionalization of care. So moving the care of children away from institutions to the families. And what is happening right now in the Ministry of Labor and Social Protection is that in 2022 or 2023, the government launched care reforms, national care reforms, which are really meant to phase out charitable care institutions. This is a global issue. It's not limited to Africa or Kenya. charitable children's institutions and to move children back to homes. Now, that's a good thing. It's noble. However, it might create a gap or, increase the care burden for families and for communities. And so what needs to be thought through is what's the support mechanisms that are needed. This actually the care reforms will happen over a period of 10 years. So my assumption is that the government has given itself 10 years to reform care and to kind of sensitize the public about the importance of things like fostering, adoption, among others, because that's what is passed. That's really, those are the mechanisms through which children will come back to their homes, and reintegration, family reintegration, among others. But I think there will still be gaps, particularly for orphans or children who have no guardians. And we need to think critically about, or even needs, care needs for when the people that adopt or foster these children, there will be care needs, as in they will still be going on with their lives, like going to work, among others. So there will be support required for these people to be able to take care of additional children without interrupting their daily lives. So in our conversation yesterday, we noted the importance of all these efforts, reforms, reading into each other. So as we work on child care systems, and this is not children in need of care and protection, this is children aged 0 to 3 who require care because to release their parents or guardians to do other things, distinguished from children in need of care and protection who are in charitable care institutions. So all these reforms need to read into each other, and any gaps identified and taken into consideration as we build our national child care system in this country.
Yeah. What are some of the challenges are there for organizing care?
I think the biggest challenge in this country is that we are yet to really, we don't have a national child care policy, and we do not have a national child care system. What we have are private attempts to create private solutions to what is actually a public problem. So we don't have a national child care system that is publicly financed and publicly supported. That's one. So it makes things difficult. So when counties are setting up childcare systems, they are setting up these variations. If you go to Turkana County, they have their own understanding of care, Mombasa, etc. So that care system is going to help us. If we enact it, it will help us to standardize things and to ensure universal access. And importantly, recognize the roles and responsibilities of government and the different players in the field. So that's one. Two, is just a question of quality. So a lot of people get into this business because it's easy to set up. You actually just need your house and demonstrate capacity to take care of children. And the assumption is if you have children, you have demonstrated capacity to take care of children, yeah? But that's not necessarily the case. Eh? So the question of quality is critical. And within quality, there are things like training, there are things like mentorship, coaching, among others. And these are some of the things that Nurture First, the organization that I spoke about, is working on. Organizations like Kidogo, Uthabiti, and Tiny Totos, Toto Care, among others, are trying to resolve that situation. And then three for me, I think, is just the question of recognition of this work. So it's these mamas provide care. Yani, they are on their own. They are on their own, and the government will only interact with them when a problem has occurred. So, we cannot deliver. So they need support. So, and the support will come once these mamas are recognized, and it's connected to the point I made about a national care system. Yeah.
Yesterday you spoke about the slum home-based care providers and mm-hmm. how the government have neglected them, mm-hmm. and yet they're very important. Please, can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, so the point I made was that these mamas, particularly in the informal, that is the primary form of provision of childcare. But they operate, you see, first of all, they are not making a living wage, which means they can't even meet registration requirements under any regime, whether you want them to register as a business or to register as a business name or whatever it is, an association.
Or even association or enterprise.
Exactly. So they will operate underground. They will operate out of the boundaries of the administration, which is I understand them, but it's something that the government needs to think about. Mm-hmm. How to, so when counties set up these laws, I think one of the things that that should happen within those laws is to recognize different forms of childcare. Like, childcare is not just provided in a childcare center. It's not just an ECD provider who can provide care. So these mamas that have been providing care, part of their recognition could be acknowledging that they've been providing care. So that's something the government calls recognition of prior learning, and then identifying what are their capacity needs, supporting them based on those capacity needs so they can provide quality services to the children.
Is the government aware of this initiative? Do you think it will be tabled in the parliament so that it can become an act for every county to have a similar, or what do you think?
I know people are working with the national government. The County of Council of Governors is on this issue, very well versed and leading some efforts towards basically a national standard. But counties are well seized. There are many, if not all counties, have started considering. Some already have laws on childcare, policies on childcare. Mm-hmm. So this is an issue that the government is willing, and in discussions that partners are having with governments, the reception is very good. So I know that it's an issue that governments are paying attention to, our county governments are paying attention to.
Yeah. You've just ended some training with journalists. Why do you think journalists are very important stakeholders in this initiative?
They play the important role of informing us about things that are happening in the community. And now that the Kenya Time Use Survey has been launched, they have, you know, they have the power of the microphone and the medium camera. They are using camera and, you know, the pen, so as to be able to report on this issue in a very accurate manner, but also to bring visibility to this issue and to sensitize the public about this issue, so that we begin building understanding of care and building communities that appreciate care workers and reward those care workers. Childcare is the emergency crisis of our times, and it's unfortunate that it's coming in the midst of other crises like climate. We are just coming off a pandemic. We are beginning to recover from the pandemic, among other things. There are several gaps in the way care is delivered in our countries, in our continent, and we need to begin conversations about shifting public systems to provide coverage to childcare and other care needs. We have elder care, we have disability care, we have sickly, etc. So we have to have very, very candid, robust conversations with our governments about how we shift the public system to support the care needs, the growing care needs of our population. And it's a good thing that we started the Time Use Survey and make the connections there, but governments have to invest in public systems, because that is the way that we will make care accessible, we'll make it affordable, we'll make it universally accessible, affordable, and of good quality. Scandinavian countries have good examples that we can follow, but if you look at Africa, South Africa, the childcare advocates in South Africa got a very good win when the government actually put in 10 million significant funding, social protection, to support childcare needs. So I think South Africa would be a good country to look at, and maybe Rwanda. Rwanda also has some good good learnings. And Ethiopia, actually the city of Addis, the mayor has put in some significant money to support childcare needs.
That was Lucy Minayo, an advocate and executive director of Nature First, a global founder and capacity builder focused on building systems that support home-based child care providers. In Mombasa, I am Diana Wanyonyi for Wings.
Thanks to all Wings supporters, including your community radio stations, Suzette Cullen and Genevieve Vaughn, whose events can be found through the website maternalgifteconomymovement.org. That's all one word, maternalgifteconomymovement.org. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album A Circle Is Cast. I'm Wings series producer Frieda Worden. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.
It is 12 p.m. on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Coming up next is Democracy Now! Views expressed in this syndicated program are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the views or positions of CFRC 101.9 FM, Radio Queen's University.
I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! This is CFRC.